C'est rendu une tradition annuelle, mon cher Hugues, d'avoir le réputé journaliste avec nous, Ben Rotterberg. On lui parle une fois par année, à peu près à ce temps-ci d'année. Il a rapidement accepté notre invitation une fois de plus. Ben, bienvenue à Sur la ligne une fois de plus. Merci d'accepter notre invitation.
Merci à vous et je suis très excité d'être ici encore.
Ben, ça nous fait absolument plaisir de t'avoir. Tu nous as déjà dit dans le passé que tu parlais un peu français, mais pour les besoins de la cause, on va te faciliter la vie et on va y aller en anglais. If you don't mind, we'll switch in English just for you. We're going to make the conversation easier for everyone. So welcome back to Sur la ligne once again. How have you been? What's up with you?
I've been good. I have not been traveling the tour at all. I mean, the furthest I've been for tennis is going about 2 kilometers east of where I live to the Washington Tournament, which was here last week. I live in D.C., so I have been pretty tunnel vision focused on getting this book done, this book biography of Naomi Osaka, which is coming out in January in the U.S. and Canada and other places. So that has been my main focus. So that's been fairly all consuming, but looking forward to that being done on my end pretty soon, and then to dipping some toes back into the tennis waters. But I've been watching a decent amount of tennis, more than I expected to, honestly, with not really covering it. I do the podcast like sporadically, like once a month or so now. But I've been watching a lot more tennis this year than I expected.
So you're still involved with No Challenge Remaining, I guess. So
yes.
All right. So just before we get into all that, where can we find the podcast and stuff?
No Challenges Remaining on anywhere you download podcasts. It should be there.
Got it.
Apple, Spotify, Overcast, whatever.
Got it. It was actually top 10 in Canada this week because we actually look at the charts. So you've been doing good in Canada.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we usually do okay in Canada. I think it's been more sporadic, but we're generally like when we show back up, we kind of, I don't know, we're kind of on protected ranking sometimes. You know, we're not playing the consistent schedule of all of our peers, but hopefully get some protected seedings when we do decide to enter.
Since we have an American journalist, let's start the conversation with maybe talking about American tennis. Hugues, do you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a good ride for U.S. tennis in the last couple of years. A lot of players emerging, obviously Tiafoe, Fritz doing well in the top 10 or around the top 10. The blooming of Chris Eubanks in Wimbledon, obviously Coco Gauff being a winner in Washington last week. Pegula doing really well. Give us your view on the state of American tennis, which seems to be back at the top level nationwide.
I think let's take the men and women separately. I think the men are definitely resurgent, probably the most optimism there's been about the men in at least 10 years. Let's say 10, 12, 15 years, yep. Something like that. Since, I mean, Andy Roddick was the last time he made a Grand Slam final. Was Wimbledon final 2009, obviously very famously close match, I think 15-13 in the fifth set against Federer in that match. And since him, no one's been in a final, and there's most of the times no one's been in top five, certainly since then. So no one really been considered a slam contender. And that's changing a little bit just because I think, first of all, the bar for what's a slam contender, I think, is dropping a bit with Federer and Nadal both not on tour right now. I think there's some more openings. And so I think people are daring to dream a bit. And I think Tiafoe is probably the carrier of most of those dreams with his run to the semifinals of the US Open last year, going 5 sets in the semifinal against Alcaraz. He was very close to possibly winning that tournament. I think he definitely could have beaten Rude in that final. So that was a high point for American men's tennis in the last 15 years or so, or 12 years, let's say. And then it's interesting because they're doing well, but also they're kind of disappointing at the same time because there's been four men who've made quarterfinals and Grand Slams for America this year. There are three at the Australian Open, which was Tommy Paul, who made semis, Korda, and Ben Shelton. And then there's also a quarterfinalist at Wimbledon and Chris Eubanks, who played great. Chris Eubanks was really good. That was pretty surprising how fast he's improved and gotten to be that level. But at the same time, I didn't mention either Fritz or Tiafoe, who are the two top 10 players. They have not made a quarterfinal of a Grand Slam yet this year, which is disappointing for them, for sure. Fritz especially, his Grand Slam results have been really pretty poor compared to his tour results. There's a big, big drop off there. So there's room for improvement, but also room for excitement, and the depth is definitely there. Like, there's going to be a lot more guys kind of in the seeded range at Grand Slams than there have been in a long time. So hopefully, you know, the quantity definitely helps, but I think for casual American fans, if they're getting, more people attached to investing in this. It's going to take a slam final or a slam champion for American man to take that next step. And they know that, you know, I think Fritz has said just as much, like, it's going to take one of us winning a slam for it to really, really break through in the public consciousness. Yeah. The women's side, actually, it's a long drought without a champion on the Grand Slam final, on the Grand Slam title side, because I think it's been 3.5 years roughly since Sofia Kenin won Australian Open in 2020, right before the pandemic. And that was the last one. And a lot of American women have made finals since then. Goff made a final of French Open last year. Collins made an Australian final. Brady made a final. They're missing, I think, someone even there as well. So there's been a lot of chances. And Serena made several finals also later in her career.
Yep.
But there's a bit of a gap there too. But Goff looked incredible in Washington. Goff in Washington, I think, gave people a lot of hope. She's playing a very consistently aggressive style, really winning easily, looked at like a lot of tactical clarity. And that's something she hasn't always had in her career. I think she's kind of been not always clear on her identity as a player, just in terms of tactically. Right. Because she is so athletic and so fast that she can defend. So I think she falls back into that while not totally committing to being a pure kind of defense player tactically. Like Wozniacki, let's say. When you talk about her too, she's back. But if Goff can keep playing like that, she can win the U.S. Open. I mean, that was U.S. Open kind of winning caliber tennis she played in Washington.
Ben, is it true that she hooked up with Brad Gilbert as a coach now? Because that could be a game changer. Being such a great tactical, smart coach, having brought some of the biggest names, obviously, in tennis to the forefront, Murray, Roddick, Agassi. So what do you think about this this matchup?
Yeah, so she had two coaches who she just started working with. So Brad Gilbert and this guy, Per Arriba, who's a former Spanish top 100 ATP player.
Yep.
And the two of them, it's tough to know without having, you know, gotten too much into that, like who's responsible for what. But I think what Gilbert is best known for is mentality and sort of being a champion and winning no matter what and closing in big moments. And I think that can be huge. You know, it's not someone who's coached very actively in WTA Tour, you know, last many years. Unlike Reba, who has more recent experience on the tour and knows the players, and I think probably a little bit more day-to-day on that sort of thing. So I think the two of them together could be a great combination. And having her father step back also, not that anything, I think actually the Goff family relationships are seen as some of the least complicated or dramatic in tennis, but still having a simpler relationship just on a professional level. She's 19 now. She's technically an adult. Having those two pro coaches there could be great. And the results have been fantastic. Obviously, it's been a very short run so far, and who knows what she'll do in Canada or Cincinnati or New York or even, you know, the rest of the year. But the beginnings were very, very strong. Again, that sort of tactical clarity. So I don't know if that's from Gilbert or if that's from Reba or a combination of the two. She was committing to hitting the ball. The forehand technique looks better. It just looked a lot, very, very improved very quickly from her after a tough first round loss at Wimbledon.
Yep. We saw Venus Williams yesterday, which really looked like a farewell match in Montreal. She lost to Bolter for first round. She was admitted on a wild card in this tournament. She didn't look too good physically, but she put a good fight. So she put on a 7-5 in the second set. She saved eight match points. So how do you assess the summer of Venus following Wimbledon and where she stands looking forward to the U.S. Open?
She played Keys, right? I think she played Madison Keys yesterday.
Yes, she played Madison Keys.
So, look, I mean, 7-5, 2-5 against Keys is respectable. And she did have a good win against Camilla Giorgi in Birmingham. That was a very high-quality match. And Giorgi is a good grass player. So that was a legit top 50 win and a player who was playing well. It's tough with Venus because, I mean, it's tough because people don't really talk about Venus on a sort of cold, just results level. The results obviously are not great. I mean, you know, she, and when she talks about herself, she says, "I'm here to win" or whatever is what she says. And then she doesn't actually win too much. But, you know, I think that she's still a huge value add. And I think that one of the things for women's tennis right now is that, this is a very transitional era after with Serena retiring and then also with Ash Barty retiring and with Naomi Osaka being off the tour for a year, there's a big gap serving continuity and in, I think, a lot of household names in tennis, right? So for a tournament like Montreal to have someone like Venus Williams on the schedule who a casual fan in Montreal can recognize as a name and say, "Oh, I know her." I think that's incredible value for the tour at this transitional moment. Wozniacki too. I mean, Wozniacki less famous than Venus Williams for sure, but still someone who more casual tennis fans will know. And I think this is a really interesting transition period for both the men and the women, but especially the women probably just in terms of, because the men still have Djokovic who's at the top. But for the women, it's sort of starting from scratch almost in terms of rebuilding the tour. So as much as you can have a Venus around, as much as you can have Wozniacki around, I think that can be very valuable from gaining attention side for women's tennis right now.
Yep.
Talking about Wozniacki, we saw her today. She was actually really, really good.
She looked really good. Yeah.
I think we would have expected. Did you expect her? I don't know if you saw the match, but did you expect her to be that good after almost 3 years without playing, basically?
Yeah, I saw a little of the match, and she knows. I think for her, her game was so much about fitness and about being an athlete, because you know she gets a lot of balls back. She's very fast. I'm not sure she's quite as fast as she was when she was, you know, 20, but the fitness is still there for her, and that's key. And that was a very comfortable win for her today against Burrell. Maybe not the most challenging opponent for her first. So I'm very interested in what will happen if she plays Vondroušová in the next round, as the recent Wimbledon champion. And that's a really interesting sort of marker for the tour in general. Like, I think there's been talk, you know, among people who are fans, like, is the level of women's tennis as good as it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, even, you know, because like I said, there's this reset, these names are not as established who are in the top five, top 10 right now. And so if someone like a Wozniacki comes out and beats Vondroušová, especially like easily, I don't know, we'll see. And Vondroušová has not been super consistent in her career. That could be an interesting conversation starter for like what's going on in women's tennis right now. If Wozniacki can show up and yep. beat the Wimbledon champion in her second match back in 3 years. So Wozniacki is very confident. And again, a lot of her game, I think, is on confidence as well. It's been a big part of her character as a player, that self-belief. Her game didn't look like it evolved. When I saw it, didn't look like it changed very much. It's different than Svitolina, who came back from maternity leave as a very different player, playing a lot more aggressive. And a lot more sort of clarity on that side. Wozniacki, in the very limited sample size of one match I saw, or even I didn't see the whole match, but the parts of the match I saw looked like the Wozniacki of 4 or 5 years ago, which is not a bad thing, obviously, but I'm sure she'll take if she can be as good as she was 4 or 5 years ago and she was a top five player the second time in her career.
I mean, if Wozniacki come back and in some way beat everyone, it would put some weight on Maria Sharapova's comments, because that's what you referred to, right? She actually said on there that the women's tennis wasn't as good as it was when she was playing, right? So I think if she comes back after 3 years without barely playing, I mean, it would add some weight to that argument, right?
Yeah, and I don't say it to be down on the women. I just think there's sort of, I think it's a transition time, right? I think, and we saw this with Świątek last year especially, and a little bit this year, where she stepped up and she was leveling up to be someone who would have been a top five, top 10, certainly at very least. That probably top five player in any era with the level of tennis that Świątek was playing last year. The rest of the tour after that, I haven't seen them be quite as consistently transcendent in that way. And also the level, I say that as someone who's an enormous admirer of what women's tennis was 20 years ago, when you had the Williams sisters, when you had Davenport, Capriati, Ennin, Kleisters, Hingis, all still sort of around at different times in that range, Dementieva, Mary Pierce. There was just a lot of talent. And those are all people who are, more or less Hall of Famers, who I just mentioned there, who are all playing at the same time. And so there was kind of a golden era in that point. And the Williams sisters being around so long gave continuity to that for a long time. Sharapova joined in there a little bit later, other players like that as well. So, it's a very high bar. I think there is a bit of a reset, and it'll take time for these women to prove themselves. So there's been a lot of different things planted and started that haven't quite, grown completely. We'll see what Vondroušová does with her Wimbledon title now that she's there. We'll see if Sabalenka or Rybakina can add a second Grand Slam title. I think the second title in this era is really kind of what matters to show that, you can back it up, because there are so many players who've won one, from Kenin to Raducanu, et cetera. I think it's kind of adding more to your account that really changes your profile in tennis at this point.
Tell us a little bit, Ben, about we have a few late bloomers in Canada, and Gabriel Diallo, Alexis Galerno went through the college system, did pretty well in the NCAA first division. Mm-hmm. If you look at Chris Eubanks now coming into the limelight, he's 27 years old. So how do you assess the development pace, especially on the
college men's side?
Which seemed to be the best path, you know, to succeed right now on the US men's side?
Look, I think the college path is doing pretty well if you get the right college system. Not all colleges and all college coaches are created equal, and all college teams and environments and things like that. Yeah. But we're seeing so much less of men, you know, getting great pro results right off the gate. A little bit more, actually, in the last year with Alcaraz. Obviously, he was a very, very special talent. And Yannick Sinner also, who had good success as a teenager as well. Holger Rune also. Those are like the top, you know, top 10 kind of guys. Otherwise, I think most tennis players are seeing it. Hopefully, they have patience and time to incubate and to kind of gain the perspective that that college gives to be on a team, to be in a non-exclusively tennis environment, to have other things to have to think about, even if not all athletes are always paying that much attention to their studies at given times. So they at least have the opportunity to do those classes and those other pursuits. And I think that can be really helpful for getting a healthy perspective and mental frame of mind when you're on the tour, because it can be very, very all-encompassing. And so then, you know, like with Naomi Osaka, for example, I was just in the midst of writing the book about when you're just on the tennis conveyor belt exclusively from the time when you're, when she started when she was 3 years old, you know, that's a very, it can be a very limited perspective sometimes you can have on the world and on the stakes of everything. And it can be tough to adjust.
Got it. Let's talk about the season in general right now. What's your highlight of the season? Is there anything that, I mean, caught your attention more? Maybe a player, maybe a situation? I don't know. What's your assessment on the season right now?
I mean, the obvious answer is going to be the Wimbledon men's final. Just because, I mean, that was what we've been waiting for a long time in men's tennis, which is a torch passing kind of moment where there is finally the young guy steps up on the big stage late in the Grand Slam in the final, especially, and beats one of the big three people. And we have not had that really at all. I mean, Medvedev beat Djokovic at the US Open a couple years ago when he was going for the counter slam, but Medvedev was already kind of around a bit. And also Djokovic was so clearly wiped from his whole run and was kind of fading there. But this was Alcaraz stepping up and making a name for himself on that big stage. And that's really important. That's what I keep mentioning Naomi, not to plug, but like when Naomi beat Serena at the US Open 2018, that was that torch passing moment. That was huge for Naomi's career and for women's tennis in general to create that continuity. Andreescu, same thing, a similar thing when she beat Serena the next year at the US Open. Also same kind of moment. And Sharapova done that with Serena, you know, back in 2004 even. So there've been moments like that a lot in women's tennis that the men maybe hadn't had since, let's say, Del Potro in 2009 when he did it. But obviously he had the injuries that was not really able to carry forward too much consistently as the storyline for them. So I think that was a really important match for tennis. And hopefully, you know, Alcaraz and Djokovic have a real rivalry. I know they're in very different generations, but they're probably going to overlap, we would think, for at least 2-3 more years at the top of the sport. And so it's plenty of time to get a lot of big matches in and to have a really compelling back and forth. You know, I think the analog I heard someone say, or I actually said myself, and I heard, I think, Chris Everett say it too. It's like when Steffi Graf was playing Martina Navratilova a lot in the late 80s, which people don't think of as the main rivalry, but there was a good solid 4-5 years where those two were meeting in a lot of Grand Slam finals, as Navratilova was the older one and Graf was coming up, and that was still very compelling cross-generational rivalry. So I have hopes for that, and I've been waiting for someone to do that with the men's tennis for a long time. So that would say it's the biggest top line kind of story in tennis this year.
Interesting. We won't take that much of your time, but before we let you go, we want an update on your book. You made a quick update at the beginning of the podcast, but where are you from now? Maybe remind us, what are you doing with the Osaka book, and when do you think it's going to be published?
Yeah, so it's set to be published in January, which is also at this point when Naomi's planning on coming back. She's planning on coming back in January in Australia, probably warm-up tournament and then the Australian Open. And yeah, so that's when it's coming out. And I still have a few last edits to do. It's still probably, it's kind of too long, which is a good problem to have, better than it being too short. So I have some stuff to cut to make it a little bit tighter. And hopefully we can have some of those cut segments surface somewhere else in some other form, maybe, if we can make that happen. Yeah, and so it's been a fun project to do, to dive into this story of the person I think has been the biggest new star during, you know, my whole reporting career the last like 12 years, where, you know, there are a few, almost everyone else who I covered who's a big star was already around before that, when I was like in high school, essentially, or not quite, you know, Djokovic and Murray, but at least close to that. And yeah, so it's been a really cool experience to do, and learned a lot of things, some things the hard way in terms of how to write a book. But it's been a fun process, and definitely have enjoyed it, and hopefully readers do too. And I think even people who are pretty hardcore tennis fans will find things they did not know in this book.
What you learned, do you think first we're going to see her back on the court, and do you think we're going to see her back at the top on the court?
So first question, definitely. She's definitely planning a comeback. She is training already. She's not hitting yet, but she is doing a lot of physical training and planning to start training closer to the comeback date. I think they're saying it's just a long time to be without that. And I do think the training will matter a lot. I think the fitness matters a lot. That's what we see Wozniacki and Svitolina have done really well. But maybe Serena honestly did not have the best fitness when she came, especially right when she came back to the tour. She was not, and she had complications with her birth and everything, but she was not really in the right shape when she first returned to the tour there. So I think Naomi should be able to get that under control, or she's at least working towards that. And then, yeah, if she'll be back to her best, no one knows. I mean, I think there's certainly a possibility. The interesting thing about Naomi compared to Serena and compared to Azarenka, let's say, is that Naomi was not at her best when she stopped. I mean, Naomi had a really pretty mediocre 2022, her worst year in a long time.
Yep.
And really was not playing very well, did not seem very inspired. And so now there's this new inspiration and new purpose now that she's had, was pregnant and had this kid. But she's gonna have to rebuild some, you know, some tennis form, because yeah, this when I was on tour traveling with her reporting and a lot of the process during the 2022 season, the results really were not good, and just sort of and weren't gonna sustain. I don't think you can be a player like Naomi, who is such a big star and also has a complicated relationship with tennis at times, and maintain that kind of level of relative mediocrity that she had last year.
Yeah.
So she has to prove that part too. So it's not as simple, but maybe that also gives her more motivation to show like that she wants to prove things, which I think can be a very powerful force in her life.
Well, if you want to come back and chat about it in January when it's out, well, please, you're welcome. Yeah. And we're going to speak on it on radio too. So we'll be happy to read that and maybe have another chat with you. Ben, thank you so much for coming on Soul Adding Podcast once again. It's always interesting to have your feeling in the game, and wish you all the best, and looking forward to maybe speak with you in January.
That would be great. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks
a lot, Ben.
Take care. Thank you.
Good. Bye.